independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
How attractive is the Houston Texans job opening? We know the list of candidates they've requested an interview with. They can start Zoom interviews with some of the coaches that aren't in the playoffs at the end of this week. So old Benny Johnson, I imagine, is going to have a little Zoom meeting with Nikki Caserio and Callie McNair. How attractive is this this opening? Carolina's out there, Arizona's out there, the Texans, Indy, Denver. Let's start with the Texans, and then we'll look at the rest of them in just a moment. From a Texans perspective, how are you selling this job to the potential candidates that are out there?
Oh, I think first and foremost, it's about the draft capital, and it's about the financial situation as it relates to salaries. I think that when you look at it, unlike the last go-round when it was still a complete and utter disaster, and Bill O'Brien had still had indelible marks all over the franchise, I think this time around you can sell a coach on the fact that, hey, we'll have you involved in the process. And like I said, if it's an offensive-minded coach, you might even tell them right then and there, if there's a quarterback that you want, if there are offensive guys that you think are going to help you right away and we can get them, tell us who they are, and we're going to work to do what you need us to do. And I think you start with the draft picks. You already know that last year's draft has to be deemed a pretty good success.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at some of the contracts that you're getting off the books, some of the financial instability that was there in the past, and say, if we need to go get free agents now, we can. And we're in a really good situation on both fronts. And that's something that a lot of teams like a Denver can't say. Like a Kyler Murray's contract alone and the situation in Arizona, and now they're trying to unload a DeAndre Hopkins, who's making a boatload of money. I think that moves them up the ladder several notches just with those 2 points alone.
I think this job is really attractive, actually.
It really is.
And it's weird to say that, because the last two go-arounds for this coaching job, well, it wasn't very attractive. You go back to David Culley. I mean, now, Deshaun Watson, when Culley accepted the job, you didn't know he was going to demand a trade. You didn't know he was not going to play. But it was still Deshaun Watson on a 4-win team and a team that was getting worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you go back to that spot. It wasn't a terrific job. It's probably better than some people like remember it, because a lot of people remember Culley taking the job and they're like, oh, he didn't have Deshaun Watson. When he took the job, he thought he was going to have Deshaun Watson. Now,
remember,
he ended up not having it. Yeah, it was like the Silas not having Harden Westbrook.
He had two talks with him to try and convince him to stick around. But I think that, you know, those are the big selling points. But then, like, we go back to the Parcells comment about every chef that's serving dinner wants to have a say-so in the groceries. Well, you don't have Deshaun Watson this go-round, but you can have a say-so in who could be the next Deshaun Watson for this franchise and other weapons. And on top of that, no state income tax. That's a big selling point for a coach that's going to be making millions.
I guess so.
It matters for athletes. I would think it would matter for coaches.
Is there a state income tax in Colorado?
I don't know.
Indiana?
I don't know.
Arizona?
I think
North
in all
Carolina?
I believe in
That's
all
That's what
of
I'm
them.
Saying. Like, I don't know. I don't know if the Texans have an advantage
over those. I just
know that
it's always been a selling point across the sports world that if you go and play somewhere in Texas, that no state income tax is a big deal.
As opposed to Canada, where they take all your money. I think we overrate that at times.
I don't know.
I don't think free agents are like, oh yeah, I'm going to go play for the Rockets because they don't have a state income tax there. I really don't.
Ooh, I do, because it can make the difference, you know, a large dollar amount.
I agree with you that it can make a difference.
And every dollar counts.
Which free agent has come to Houston because they don't want to pay a state income tax? Like, I know that
people say that is the top of the list selling point,
right?
But it does factor in.
I think it's more of like a happy accident than it is like a selling point to free agents. Now, maybe more so for coaches and like executive types than actual players, because players care a lot about like the situation, the team, can they win,
sure,
who's paying them top dollar, things like that. But, you know, the draft picks you mentioned, it's a young roster. You have two top 12 picks this year. You have $40-something million in salary cap space. You have two first-round draft picks again next year to add to the team. I think the Texans' position is very attractive this go-around, and I think that some of these coaches that you've seen on this interview list, and if they all accept the interview, you can see that the quality of the position is out there. If you look at it relative to the rest of the NFL, the other jobs that are out there, and different people have ranked them in different way, do you think the Texans' opening is better than Carolina's opening?
I do.
I do, too.
Yeah, I really do.
Carolina's got a better defense right now. They don't have a quarterback. They have some picks coming up because of the Christian McCaffrey trade,
hurt,
but not
so
two in the top 12.
You've had some injuries to some of the guys that you drafted expecting them to be key parts of your rebuild and your future, too.
Yeah. Like, I think they probably have a better roster right now, but I don't think they will in 2 to 3 years.
I agree with that. I agree with that. And I think that some of the guys that they drafted and the way that they kind of rebuilt their roster was kind of to appease their owner who wanted to be more win now and wasn't willing to do what we said you shouldn't do, which is look short term and then expect results long term, which aren't going to be there.
I think the Houston job is better than the Carolina job. How about the Arizona job?
I think for the simple fact, if I'm going to hang my hat on the two big selling points of draft capital and financial situation with the cap, you're in a tough situation with the cap, with Hopkins, with Kyler Murray, and you've got to work out a relationship with a Kyler Murray, who is a very difficult guy for what you read and hear and see to deal with. And so I think that, you know, you're also going to, you would think they're going to hire a general manager first and let them hire the coach, but you don't know because ownership might not be in that. And they might see a coach they're enamored with and then realize that's a relationship that's going to have to be somehow hammered out. I look at Arizona across the board, and I think they were trying to be in win-now mode now for a little too long, and they're going to have some digging out to do before they can truly kind of press the reset button. So I think that
it might depend on how you feel about Kyler Murray. If you like Kyler
really
Murray,
does.
I think you look at the Arizona job
for
as
a lot
better.
Of cake for yeah. a lot of years with that guy.
And look, no one's taking the Arizona job, one, unless Kyler Murray wants them, apparently. But also that you're not taking Arizona if you don't like Kyler Murray. Because you know that Kyler Murray's sticking around.
Yeah, and he ain't going anywhere, and he's on the books for a lot of money. And I think that's why a defensive-minded head coach is probably going to be a guy that wants that job more, because he knows there's defensive pieces that he can work with that he likes. But I think that Kyler Murray's going to want an offensive-minded coach, and like you said, have a say-so in who they bring in, yeah. a la Deshaun Watson, and that might be a conflict.
And if you're like picking which job of the two you think is better, I think it comes down whether or not you like Kyler Murray. If you like Kyler Murray, mm-hmm. I think you say the Arizona job is better. If you think Kyler Murray can't win, then you say the Houston job is better. How about the Denver job? Is the Denver job better than the Houston job? They have a much better
defense.
Before we get
off Arizona, I'm not sure what their draft situation is for what they've given up. We know they gave up a second for DeAndre Hopkins.
I think they have all their first.
I don't know if they've made any trades recently that gave up first round.
No, I think they have all their first. Okay. They haven't went the less need model. I'm pretty sure they have all their first.
Denver job to me is a no-brainer. We talked about this before. I think Denver might be the worst job out there simply because you are in cap hell and quarterback hell with the Russell Wilson we saw of last year. Now, could he resurrect it?
Yep.
Sure. It's possible, but you know you are in bed with him long-term at a large amount of money, guaranteed. He ain't going anywhere. You've given up a lot of your assets while you got Russell Wilson and brought him in. Is your defense decent or have the capability of being pretty good? Absolutely. But everything else kind of sets you back from the draft, the two major selling points, from the draft capital aspect, from the salary cap issues. I don't think Denver is as attractive a job at Houston by a long shot.
I don't either. It probably comes down to how you feel about Russell Wilson, much like the Arizona job, whether or not you feel like you could resurrect the career of Russell Wilson after he... I honestly think he's had a couple of bad years in a row.
Yeah.
I don't think his last year in Seattle was all that great.
Well, the first half was awful. which has been a staple for Russell Wilson. The first 8 to 10 weeks, he'll knock your socks off, and then he'll go completely off the grid in the second half.
Indianapolis. The Colts job.
Look, we've said for a while the roster other than quarterback has been pretty darn good. You got a stud running back.
Yeah.
You've got some good young receivers. You've got a decent – you got both sides of the O&D line in the trenches are good. It's a pretty good situation to where taking out taxes in the city itself and all those other things, just from a football perspective – I think in terms of being able to win now and have sustainability and a high draft pick, I think Indianapolis might be a better situation.
I think Indy's the best job out there. I really do. I think the Colts is the best job out there, especially if you have what Chris Ballard, you came out yesterday and said that like they do whatever to move up. So if the Colts are all of a sudden going to be in business for one of the top quarterbacks in this draft, you put one of the top quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks, remember, because your rookie contract scale is very important.
Jonathan Taylor.
You add that to Jonathan Taylor. I like Michael Pittman a lot. I think Alec Pierce is a very good player, and that defense is all right. That defense didn't have Shaquille Leonard most of the year. I think that's the best job that is out there. Now, the Jim Irsay factor, I don't know how coaching candidates view Jim Irsay as being like a detriment or not. I don't know. I have no idea. But I think the Colts is the best job. How you feel about the quarterback situation in Arizona and Denver kind of swings those two for me. I'm not like, I know that we've talked a lot about Kyler Murray, and I love Kyler Murray's skill sets. I think he's one of the best athletes in the world. Find me a dude who's been picked in the top 10 in baseball and football, like no one. But I don't love what's going on upstairs. And if I'm a coach,
I don't like body language.
Yeah.
I don't like locker room. I don't like the way he treats his teammates or his coaching staff.
Yeah. And even, like, aside from that, like, is he giving you his all? Like, is he watching the film? And I think that playing the quarterback position is, like, so sophisticated to where that's where you win or lose games, is the work you put in before you ever step on the field. And he's, like, huge investment there. And he's also the dude calling the shots. Their owner saying that Kyler Murray is going to have input on the head coaching job. So that, to me, I would not be that interested there. And then I also don't want to hitch my wagon to a Russell Wilson who's in his mid-30s and he looked awful this year with a terrible, terrible contract, and you've also given up draft capital there. I think Indy's the best job. I think the Texans are the second best job.
Disagree. I think definitely the Texans have come a long way just from the standpoint of attractiveness to potential coaching candidates, to where I don't think, other than maybe a DeMeco Ryans, and there might be more to it that we've talked about with his previous experiences in Houston and the lawsuit, to where he might have a lot of reasons for why he just wouldn't consider the Texans, and some bad blood might still be there. Other than that, I think that it's as attractive a job as out there, except for maybe Indianapolis, and that should speak volumes to everybody that's watching this and hoping that they actually get the right coach this go-round.
713-780-ESPN, how attractive do you think the Texans' job is? Where do you think it is relative to the rest of the NFL? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Also, what if the Texans don't go quarterback at number two? Would you be all right with that? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
0830, the Texans' job is much more appealing than it was this time last year. Better draft position, some young guys to build around, just need patience to build. That's the tough part. Patience is tough. We're seeing the patience of football fans in the city being tested.
Tried. Yep, they are trying their patience over and over again, and they have been for 3 years now.
They have, and I think a lot of people are getting impatient. I understand that. I would advise that don't let that impatience lead to bad decisions. That's all I'm going to say. Don't like we had somebody else say that. This one, 1143. Can the Texans trade number two pick another asset to the Ravens for Lamar Jackson? Like, that's kind of the impatience to where, like, oh, yeah. go get that quarterback that's top 10 in the league, and then, you know, you're built for success. You put Lamar Jackson on this team, you're going to win six or seven games, and then you've lost a lot of your future draft assets, and you've limited how far you can actually go as an organization.
It's a different guy, same situation. That's why I don't want Carr. That's why I don't want Lamar. Because they're at a certain point already in their career that the rest of your roster is not. And so by the time the rest of your roster catches up with wherever those guys are in their career and wherever they're going, they're going to be down on the downhill spiral. They're going to be trending downward. They're going to cost you a ton of money right off the jump.
Yeah,
and that's going to set you back in one of the two selling points why you're one of the most attractive jobs out there in this cycle. So I don't like either one of them because you don't have enough of the rest of the team and roster around them to make them anything other than what you said, a mediocre-type football team at best.
I mean, look what the Colts have done. Phillip Rivers, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz. I mean, you don't want to go that route. That just sets you back, and they're picking number four now.
But if those guys are far lesser than any of the two guys we're talking about.
I don't think that's an apples-to-apples comparison, though.
Because Lamar's better than those guys, but exactly. I don't know if Carr's a whole lot better than those guys.
I think he's better than any of the guys they brought in at this point in their career. Now, if you want to tell me Matt Ryan in his heyday was better, I'll absolutely agree with that.
But where they're at when they got brought in. Yeah, the Colts were adding a veteran quarterback to a playoff type of roster, hoping they could go the Matthew Stafford
like
LA
retread.
Rams road.
I don't like going retreads.
Does Lamar count as a retread,
Lamar's
though?
Not a retread, but I view Carr as
that. To Jeremy's point, though, a retread, if it's at a certain caliber, a certain level, when you have the rest of the roster ready to win right now,
right,
different.
Can totally be completely sensible, as opposed to a complete rebuild situation where you haven't even gotten deep into the rebuild enough to build depth, and now you're going to put, you know, your big-time money franchise quarterback, wherever they are in their career, in the middle of it and say, now we're where we need to be? Nope.
Look, I'm anti.
Well, and the trade probably would have to give up some of that draft capital that makes you attractive, too.
It depends on who it is.
I don't think for Carr as much as it would be for Lamar.
You could sign Jimmy Garoppolo. I think if you just take the contract of David Carr's brother Derek, you could get him for like a fifth.
Right, because he's making a boatload of cash.
Yeah, I don't think that
But if it's for Lamar, I would expect that they expect to get multiple ones out of the deal.
Absolutely, absolutely. Lamar, to me, is off the table. Now, I'm anti-retread quarterback. I'm anti that route. The only way that I would entertain that is if the Texans want D'Amico Ryans,
and
D'Amico Ryans demands taking a defensive player at number two, trade down or defensive player at number two, and then all of a sudden you're out of the Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis area, and you go like a Hendon Hooker in the middle round, like a third rounder on Hendon Hooker, something like that, and then you sign a bridge quarterback like a Jimmy Garoppolo, and then it's for a year.
Whoever.
Darnold's going to be under contract.
Is he?
Yeah, they're keeping him, I believe.
I thought he was free at the end of the
show. I don't think so.
Okay.
I will have to double check that. But that's the only way that I would entertain that idea. And I wouldn't even entertain that idea before I started to think of the D'Amico Ryan equation. Like, if D'Amico Ryan comes in and he says, I need a defensive player at two, that's the only way you're hiring me, and the Texans give in, and they take either Will Anderson or Jalen Carter.
Well, then I'm trading down.
Well, he wants Will Anderson or Jalen Carter.
But I think you'll get either one of those guys.
Where?
Well, if Indy moves up, and then I could see at least one other team that was trying to get a quarterback to move up.
I don't think you could get either one of those guys outside of the top five. Even if there's three quarterbacks that are taken in the top five,
right,
which is some people would say I'm crazy for saying that.
Yeah.
It's Bryce Young, it's C.J. Stroud, it's Will Levis, and then the top two defensive players would be Jalen Carter and Will Anderson.
Now
that's your top.
I've seen the early draft predictions prior to the Bears getting one. Was no matter where the Bears were picking in the top five, they were taking offensive line.
Okay. Like, even I don't see.
And I don't know who the top offensive lineman was, but like, if that's the way they want to go, more power to them. But I just think that you could get maybe below five. I see your point that it might be risky.
I would be floored if Jalen Carter or Will Anderson are available at six. Either one of them. I would be floored.
Okay.
I just don't see it happening. So if D'Amico, let's just say D'Amico demands defensive player number two.
Mm-hmm.
All right, defensive player number two. Either you're trading up for a rookie quarterback, or you're more than likely not getting one of the top three at 12. Maybe that brings in an Anthony Richardson, but Anthony Richardson, I don't think is going to be ready to go right away. Yeah, it's a project. Like, he probably needs to redshirt a year, probably needs to sit a year. So if you go that route, D'Amico Ryans, defensive-minded head coach, you draft him a defensive player at number two, Jalen Carter, Will Anderson, you're in a position where you probably have to go bridge quarterback for a season. You're not going back with Davis Mills.
No doubt, right, because you're either getting it, if you do eventually take a quarterback, you're taking a guy that's going to take some time to develop, and you also, for the short term, because you've probably worn out your welcome with Davis Mills and you're not looking at bringing any of the other guys back, you're going to go and get a guy that for a bridge also gives you the best chance to get the guy that truly will change your offense, which if you're going to let a defensive-minded head coach load up the defense in his first year on the job, then you probably are going to have the same or similar type offense for at least one more year. You're hoping Caleb Williams is there. You're hoping you get the number one pick, and then you go quarterback and load up on offense.
Now, you do have the draft capital next year where you can make some moves, but it doesn't guarantee it. It doesn't guarantee that you can move up there or, you know, and Texans are going to want to win games next year. Watch that press conference on Monday. Nick Caserio is going to want to win six games this year. Like, he feels that he has to show improvement so he doesn't get sacked.
Because Caserio has to face the harsh reality that they might be in a position to draft a quarterback next year if they play out the scenario that you just gave, but he won't be around to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's a speech. I think that's possible. I think it's possible they hire D'Amico, they take Anderson and Carter at number two, they take best player available at number 12. I don't think it would be a quarterback. And what do you do at the quarterback position then?
Right. You have to get in a veteran retread just to get you through one more season. But with that, You are basically admitting that you are not going to win a lot of football games.
I think you can win more games that way.
You can win more games you won this year. I don't think you're going to win that many more games overall.
I think next year, like if our only goal is to win games next year, we're not doing these crazy things like trading for Lamar Jackson. I think you win more games going defense in the first round and bringing in Jimmy Garoppolo than you do if you go rookie quarterback and best player available at 12.
But I still don't think it's the best long-term interest. Enough other resources to where you're going to be competitive offensively in a lot of these games. Are you going to win more games than last year? Absolutely, it's possible. And with a veteran quarterback, with a veteran decision maker that can make better passes than Davis Mills, absolutely you're going to win more games. But again, it's going to set you back in getting your franchise quarterback.
I agree.
Though you could trade
for that. But that's not the conversation.
But I think they're going to win more games. But
not versus this year. Which scenario wins you more games next year? Jalen Carter, Will Anderson at two, best player available at 12, veteran quarterback, or not Bryce Young, quarterback at 2, best player available at 12. Which one wins you more games next year? I think it's the defensive player.
Well, he's going to make mistakes.
And I'm not saying this is what you do. Like, I'm not at all saying that.
No, I get that. I'm saying, though, when you look at it from that perspective, even if you get your franchise quarterback, he's probably not going to be very good
in year
one.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's hard to win with rookie quarterbacks, and that's
the point. You'll win more games than last year, but is that what, you know?
No. Not last year. Like, which scenario wins you?
Next year, you would win more games.
Yeah, next year with the veteran quarterback, Jalen Carter. Because, like, the defensive player is going to have a bigger impact in year one, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Look at Sauce Gardner.
Exactly, than a rookie quarterback. Mm-hmm. Than a rookie quarterback would. Trevor Lawrence, who was the first quarterback taken 2 years ago, is starting to find his stride a little bit. It's very difficult.
Urban Meyer had a lot to do with how bad he was year one.
Like, I'm having a hard time remembering, and B-Mac, you can chime in here, too. Like, when was the last time a rookie quarterback came in and all of a sudden was, like, unbelievable? Like, Ben Roethlisberger comes to mind. Yeah, but that's because he's on a great team.
Yeah, Steelers went 15-1 his rookie year. I mean, Andrew Luck led the Colts to the playoffs in his rookie year.
But even Roethlisberger's rookie year, they were 15-1?
They were 15-1. Now, he was game managing. He was not the quarterback that he became later.
And he was taken in the teens. Yeah. Like, which quarterback in the top three, top five?
Miami of Ohio, I think.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. But which quarterback in the top three, top five?
I mean, Andrew Luck stands out.
Andrew Luck stands out.
He went 11-5 and made the playoffs in his rookie year.
Andrew Luck, who was probably the best quarterback prospect since Manning and Elway.
Manning, yeah.
So, like, do you think a rookie quarterback is going to come in and win 11 games?
Max Jones was a rookie quarterback a year ago and made the playoffs, but he wasn't a top five.
Yeah, and he was a game manager. I don't know if you would necessarily took the team on his back per se.
If the goal was to win games next year more than anything else, and I'm not saying this is the goal. It should not be the goal. You go defense, 2-12, especially if it's D'Amico Ryans. You give him his defense that keeps you in games, and you bring in a Jimmy Garoppolo. You run the San Francisco offense, and you're going to have to commit money.
And hopefully not for too long, but if you're going to get any bridge quarterback, it's going to cost you, and it's going to hopefully be as short a deal as you can possibly get them to accept. But then you're still going to need to give them some resources around that, too, in order to at least be serviceable on offense.
Sure. But I think that you could be serviceable offensively next year, more so with Garoppolo than you would with a rookie quarterback, with what you have. And especially if it's that type of offense where they're going to run the ball a ton.
I see where you're going with
it. You have a Damian Pierce. You draft like a supporting cast running back in the fourth round with pick 101.
Big picture, you're better off getting the franchise quarterback.
Absolutely.
And moving forward. But for the short term, again, which we told you not to do yesterday, but if you're thinking just short term, just win as many games as possible, be better, then you can load up on defense and you can stop people and you can be in the games.
713-780-ESPN. What if the Texans don't go quarterback at 2? Like, what's the plan there? Are you okay with that? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Well, the wait is over, everybody. And Chris Smith, the owner, could not be happier, nor could I, nor could so many other people. Frankie's Italian Kitchen is back up and better than ever before. Double the size of the old Frankie's location, but in the exact same neighborhood, within a mile of the old location. They are ready to go, and they are ready for you with the new Frankie's Italian Kitchen. It is bigger, it is better than ever, and for football weekends, like the one coming up in the NFL, get to the new Frankie's Italian Kitchen for a great meal and all the sports. 8 monster TVs, and you can get all the drinks at the bar in a beautiful atmosphere while you get all that best Italian food in the area. NFL action on those big screens. Call in your order, pick it up to go, and get wings and pizza and all the things that you need to have the best catered experience without catering it, just picking it up and bringing it back to the house for your football viewing pleasure. Frankie's Italian Kitchen takes care of you like they always do, and the delicacies are there. Double French pork chop, a veal bone-in chop as well that is unbelievable, 20-ounce bone-in ribeyes, that and a whole lot more. Frankie's Italian Kitchen, located in the same neighborhood, only location a mile away from the old location, north side of FM 1093 between Spring Green and FM 1463. It's right off Highway 99, right close to the Katy, Fulcher, Richmond, Sugarland area. And Chris, as the owner, makes sure that he makes everything from scratch, takes care of you with the freshest ingredients, and the food is absolutely delightful. Check him out today. Tell him I sent you by. I had friends going there yesterday and others going there this weekend. It feels like you're amongst family and friends because you are. It's Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I'm getting tired of seeing all the reasons not to like certain quarterbacks in this draft. College stats mean nothing. What else have I seen recently about certain players and reasons that they shouldn't be picked? Like where they went to school.
You know all along that the big powerhouse schools, there's too much talent. There's too much space for the receivers that are all, you know, five-star NFL prospects.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can't fairly judge a quarterback because the receivers are too open.
You know what we're going to hear? We're going to hear about a lot. We're going to hear about that, people being too open. We're going to hear about supporting casts that they had in college. We're going to see college stats coming up a lot.
Because Alabama had an NFL roster, Jeremy.
They did more Bryce Young's junior year there, or second year, two years ago. Ohio State was incredible. Look at the Ohio State receivers that they've had over the last 2 years.
Yeah, Olave and Garrett Wilson.
And now Marvin Harrison
Smith
Jr.
And Jetta, Marvin Harrison Jr. Yeah. All of those dudes are going to be first-round draft picks.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, every Wilson and Olave already were.
Every single one. Like it's, but the reasoning that I'm seeing, like if you want hand size is going to be a factor, height, all of these things. The NFL ball is bigger than the college football, by the way. Just remember that. NFL ball is
a little bit wider. Was it Kenny Pickett that was a big talking
Kenny
point
Pickett
with
last year?
Yeah,
Kenny Pickett last year. I do think it matters a bit. I really do. I think to a certain extent.
It can't be ridiculously small. Agreed. You have to be able to grip the football.
It is, to me, I do weigh it. It is a weight whenever you're evaluating an NFL quarterback prospect, but it's pretty low on the list. It's a pretty low value that I give it. Lance tweeted this morning. I guess they had Phil Simms on this morning with the
pitch. They did. Yep.
He said, just had Phil Simms made a great point regarding quarterback evaluation on our radio show. Don't overvalue the production or the scheme. Judge the player and what that player's capabilities are. I think that sums it up so perfectly because people evaluate quarterback prospects like, okay, well, he looked like this in this game against SEC school X. He put up this amount of yards. He put up this amount of touchdowns. He did this. He did that. Very, very seldom are they talking about a player's like skill, quite honestly. And when Sim says don't overvalue the production or the scheme, production, you look at Stroud, you probably look at Bryce Young a little bit. The scheme, you probably look more Ohio State, maybe Alabama a bit, but probably more Ohio State when it comes to scheme because it's a very offensive happy system. Alabama's gotten offensive happy. And people are like, well, he had to duel Bill O'Brien. I have news to break for you. Bill O'Brien is an offensive coordinator in the college game, is a good play caller. Like, if you have Bill O'Brien calling your offensive plays, you're doing pretty good at the college game.
So tainted about their experience with Bill O'Brien. They're not going to look at him favorably no matter what he does.
I agree with that. Like, he's going to get an offensive coordinator job in the NFL. If you have a dude who's a pretty good offensive coordinator in the NFL, that means he is probably a good to great offensive coordinator in the college game.
Look, and I think as it relates to these quarterbacks, and listening to the interview with Phil Simms, which was a good one. If you missed it, go back and catch it on the podcast. He and his sons work with a ton of quarterbacks. And the other thing where he was kind of almost stressing without actually coming out and saying it is the measurables matter. Like, as long as you have a big kid with a rifle of an arm, he talked about how Trevor Lawrence went back after last season and basically reconstructed his throwing motion and became a stronger arm in the pocket with more accuracy. They mentioned Brady and how many times throughout his career he's tinkered and changed. And Rodgers, they mentioned too, as guys that once they got in the league were still looking for the solutions to if they didn't have a strong enough arm, if they weren't accurate enough. And though you can't completely fix a lot of guys, in a lot of cases you could get more zip on the football, which helps you a lot in making the passes connect more often and them being receptions instead of incomplete. But he talked about how many different guys have changed and adapted and basically reconstructed during the course of their careers to be more successful. So if you can get a kid that brings everything else to the table and he's fixable, so to speak, by willing to be open to open-mindedly changing his what got him to this point, then there's possibilities.
Look, you and I could kick it around all day. We can have our favorites. And it's the fun of the draft. Like, it's fun doing these things. I'm not being critical. I know I sounded critical, but it's fun. Like, that's the excitement of the offseason. And it's the excitement of a rebuilding team is to kind of speculate what this number second pick in the draft would look like for your team. That's why I want an offensive coach, because I want Benny Johnson to take this job. And Nick Caserio said the second pick is yours to take the quarterback, and I'm going to have all faith in Benny Johnson to take the quarterback. And if Benny Johnson says, like, let's just assume all three quarterbacks are on the board because the Bears go Will Anderson, whatever, just throwing out a scenario. And Benny Johnson comes in and he says, well, Bryce Young is the best guy for my offense. Okay, Benny Johnson, I trust you. If Benny Johnson says, you know what, it's C.J. Stroud. Okay, Benny Johnson, I know your prowess in the league. I know how good of a play caller you were this year in Detroit. I trust you. If he says it's Will Levis, I'm going to say, okay, he puts mayo in his coffee, but I trust you, Benny Johnson. I'm going to trust an offensive mind. I don't have that same trust with Caserio. If it's a defensive-minded guy, if it's D'Amico Ryans, I don't know if I have that trust. It depends on who's on his
honest,
offensive
Jeremy,
staff.
Of the two guys, too, who's got the best chance of being here long-term, the coach or Nick Caserio?
The coach.
And so,
first time you can say that.
Right. And what I said yesterday is what I hold true to. I'm not trying to crap on any of the three guys. I don't care which one they get, as long as they get the one with the best chance to succeed. And the way to start that process off on the right foot is to make sure if you get one, which I've said I want, the offensive-minded coach, like you just mentioned, and two, you let him have a say-so in terms of choosing the guy that he wants that's best suited to execute his offense, and then you're already head and shoulders above where you've been and headed in the right direction, because now you know for the next several years you have a team together within the team that is going to basically give your team the best chance to succeed offensively. And I love that, because I said not only should he have a say-so, whoever you hire at head coach, in the number one pick or number two overall, but 12 should be in play too. And if you get an offensive-minded head coach, you go different than what you say with D'Amico, but the same philosophy of, we're going to let you have something to say about 1-12, or 2-12. Somehow, in some way, if you get a quarterback and you get the best receiver on the board at 12, I think you're doing pretty good.
713-780-ESPN. Could you live with the number two pick if it's not a quarterback?
Yeah, I basically know what they're doing then. I mean, I think that more so without saying it, then I could live with it knowing that they're going to be full-blown looking towards Caleb.
Well, I don't think Nick Caserio can afford to do that.
Well, Nick can't, but the rest of the organization can.
I don't know if anybody's going to have that mindset. And, like, I don't hate that mindset either.
Well, and that's the other thing. No matter who has the final say-so on the picks, unless it's Cal.
Cal's not deciding if Caleb
is
the future.
So then we're going to get a situation where Nick knows he's on the hot seat. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that scenario is going to play out and completely go away from quarterback at two. I think that because Nick's trying to save his job, that I don't think he's willing to embrace the suck for another year.
I've been confused about what I want at two ever since the Texans blew pick number one. Because I was always team trade down, make sure you get your quarterback with where you trade down. And you can kind of still do the same, but you don't have nearly the value that you have at number one. Now, let's just insert the Colts as the team that's trading up to get the quarterback. They're going to be trading with the Bears. They're not going to be trading with you. So you've lost a tremendous amount of like opportunity cost if you're team trade down. I'm not sure I'm still team trade down now that I had number two. I'm also not sure if Bryce Young goes number one, if I'm going to be taking a quarterback at number two. I like Levis more than Stroud, but I'm not sure I want Levis to be the number second pick of the draft. So, like, what am I getting in a trade down? Am I losing the opportunity of a, like, once-in-a-generation defensive player with Will Anderson? Like, I could see a scenario where Bryce Young goes number one to whoever. Let's say it's Chicago and they trade Fields, or somebody else trades up and gets Bryce Young. Well, you're sitting on the clock and you have to decide between Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, C.J. Stroud. If you want to throw Will Levis into the conversation, throw Will Levis into the conversation. It would make sense to me if that pick is Will Anderson.
Yeah, I don't know that Caserio can afford to do that, so therefore I don't think he will do that.
Why can't he afford to do that?
Don't they have enough draft assets to where if in this scenario they go defensive player at number two, whoever that is, to let the Colts possibly take a quarterback at number four, assuming they haven't traded up, and with the assets they have, move up from 12 to maybe 7 or 8 and get that third quarterback, whether it be Levis or Stroud, whoever fell to that point.
They absolutely could do that.
They could, yes.
I mean, it's a gamble.
It's a risk.
You're risking a quarterback run before you even get up to number seven number eight. But I think there is a scenario there where you could still
and
get
you're
the quarterback you like.
And you're burning a pick or picks to get the third pick, the third best quarterback.
Well, assuming
that's
they
third best based on what the draft is telling you, it might be their first favorite.
But if we're talking about trusting Benny Johnson and whoever he decides is the best quarterback, in this scenario, let's say he decides Will Levis is my best quarterback, but I know he's not going to pick 6, 7, 8. then I do think it makes sense to take a Will Anderson and then trade up from 12 to get your
That's
guy.
That's super risky, though.
It is risky.
Because if you're bringing in an offensive coach like Benny Johnson, and Benny Johnson's telling you, I like Levis the most, and now he's going to Caserio, and Caserio's all of a sudden trying to play a little bit of poker here, where I'm gonna take the best available player, too. I don't think that Will Levis will go until, let's say, 7th. I'm going to trade up to number 6 to lock him in. And then all of a sudden, there's 3 quarterbacks that go in the top 5.
Right.
And then what do you do now?
Now, other teams react to that based on when you make the trade.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we know Houston's going quarterback. They're probably going the guy we like. We'll move up above then.
I almost think you have to reach in that scenario. And that's like, I don't think that they go defense at 2 unless they hire a defensive-minded coach.
I think
the
biggest problem I got right now, Jeremy, is the more we talk about it, the more that because Caserio realizes that he doesn't have it on easy street for and shouldn't expect to be here for all 6 years of his contract, and he knows this could be his last go-around, that he gets more like Pace in Chicago, where he's protecting his ass, he's covering his ass, and he's starting to think a little bit more about the short term than he should.
I would also say this, though. Like, if you draft a rookie quarterback, I think you get a little bit more leeway in terms of winning games his rookie year. Like, if you draft rookie quarterback at number 2, and he looks good, but maybe you only win 6 games,
right.
It's like, okay, we're going in the right direction.
Oh, absolutely.
It gives you
and
optimism.
Cal wins because the fans start coming back because they're excited, and the team shows progress, and there's signs of moving the needle in the right direction, so then there's a lot more positivity. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right in that, Pat.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Can you afford not to go quarterback at number 2? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Can the Texans afford not to take a quarterback at number 2? Bryce Young is gone. Bryce Young's first overall pick. You're sitting there at number 2, and you got Jalen Carter, Will Anderson, CJ Stroud, Will Levis as your options. Do you have to go quarterback in that spot? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 6030 says if they aren't drafting a quarterback, then it better be because they traded back for more. We kind of discussed that a little bit in the previous segment. Here's the issue that I have with that, is that you can't guarantee that you get a quarterback. And if you hire an offensive-minded coach and you don't draft the rookie quarterback, I think you've dropped the ball. I think that you've failed. That is a huge mistake if the Texans were to, like, all of a sudden be screwed out of one of these top 3 quarterbacks in the first round of the NFL draft because they start to play a little bit of poker and all of a sudden they traded back too far.
Too far.
And I also think that if you look at this draft, I think there's there's one tier of defensive players. And I think Will Anderson and Jalen Carter are on their tier by themselves.
Yeah,
and then everybody else is, you know, different tiers. I believe that the Texans, look, if you're going to say to me that you can't go quarterback at number 2, you feel like it's too much of a reach for Stroud or Levis, whatever, because, you know, Bryce Young went number 1. I think that you have to, from a Texans perspective, I think you have to leave this draft with at least one of those 4 players. With at least one of those 4 players. You have to get at least one of Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, Will Levis, or C.J. Stroud. I don't think that there is an alternative for the Texans, because now if you're trading back and you don't get any of those dudes, you either don't have the quarterback or you don't have a defensive player from that top tier of defensive players in this draft. I think you have to get one of those 4.
Here's the thing that concerns me, Jeremy, is everything that we talked about previously this show today about what Cal has been saying and the direction that he's looking to appease and how he's trying to be more of a fan's owner and do all those things. I think that with what the scenario you just painted, if they go defense at all, I think that with that first pick, I think that the fan base and all the excitement, I think it goes down a notch. I don't think there's enough in terms of the type of football fans that we're talking about that know enough about Anderson or the kid from Georgia to say, yeah, I mean, I'm really fired up about this now. But if you get one of those 3 quarterbacks that everybody can't stop talking about, then at least you're swinging. You're swinging for the fences a little bit. You're doing what everybody expects you to do. And I think the luster's still there. I think it comes off a little bit if you go defense. And right or wrong, or from a football, strictly football mentality, if that is, it could be the intelligent way to try and play this out. But I think just for perception, a lot of people are going to be highly disappointed if you end up taking defense with your first round pick.
I think they'd be more disappointed if it was Levis.
Probably right.
I think that Stroud would be the popular pick there. Like, if we just pulled the audience, Bryce Young goes number one, Texans are on the clock, number two, you can't trade down. They would want Stroud more than anybody else.
Taking Young out of the conversation, because I think that everybody's enamored with the name and the university to say Young's got to, he's the one that everybody knows the most.
We're off. Look, I don't think it's a guarantee to go one either.
Right? I don't think
so
either.
But if Chicago isn't blown away with a deal and all of a sudden they just draft Will Anderson, because I think Will Anderson's the best player available and they're committed to
Justin Fields.
But if
Stroud continues to work out well and can blow people's minds with the way he goes through the workouts.
I would lose a lot of money if C.J. Stroud went ahead of Bryce Young in this draft. I do not see it. Do not see it at all. I think there's a better chance that Levis goes ahead of Bryce Young than Stroud goes ahead of Bryce Young.
I think that the more, first of all, we all know that it's the last thing that you've seen. And the last thing they saw was a totally...
I think from a fan perspective, I don't think the NFL falls into that.
I don't know. You know, talking to Lance about it, you know what? I don't think I don't think he's still convinced that Levis is
he's not.
Is that guy.
He's not at all.
And I think that he's... we should have him on at some point, because I think that because of the measurables, I think that not that... That there's a huge jury out, but remember, this was the number one rated quarterback coming into this season that everybody said, when the season's over, this is the guy that's going to be the first pick in the draft. And then most of the regular season in college football, he basically kept slipping. Now, because of that semifinal game, if he works out well and he tests out well and people really see more than they thought that they had seen at Ohio State, I think there's a chance he climbs back up again.
I don't see it.
Okay.
I don't see it. We'll have to hurry up and wait. 713-780-ESPN.
He can change and fix things that Bryce Young can't, right? Because the knock on Bryce Young, you can't change the size, and I don't think to a lesser degree can you add weight.
Right.
I don't think it works. But I think
Stroud's limited with his arm, actually. I don't think Stroud makes a ton of NFL throws. I think there's a lot of stuff that he's going to have trouble with, and I think that the more that we see, like, the draft experts heading into the draft, I think there's going to be a lot of concern
we'll
about
see,
Stroud's
because
arm.
I think that, like, we, you know, again, listening to Phil Simms from his perspective, you get a guy that has all the measurables and everything like that. Quarterback coaches and other guys, gurus, can work with you to
they
get,
can't make your
to
arm get, stronger.
Well,
like you mentioned, Bryce Young, like he has things that he can't fix, like his height, his size. We get wider, but not taller. Whereas Stroud, like, you're not going to make him have a cannon.
It's how you evaluate, can you make it stronger? Because I think based on mechanics and using the legs more and how you fire out of it and basically where your arm placement is, I think you can put more zip on the football. Is it a cannon? Probably not.
Yeah, we'll see. 713-780-ESPN. Can you afford to take a player that's not a quarterback at number two? 7593, they already blew the chance to take whoever they wanted at one and now risk being jumped by someone else and not getting their pick of the quarterback litter. I think you take best available or trade down. Don't force a quarterback at two just to get one. I understand that logic, and most of the time I would be supportive of that logic. But with this draft class, I think you have to get one of the four players. And let's just throw Bryce Young into the conversation because if Will Anderson goes one. I think that you have to get at least one of five players in this draft. It needs to either be Anderson, Carter, Young, Stroud, or Levis. Uh-huh. And if you trade down, all of a sudden, all of that is risk. Like, if you trade down to six, and then those are the first five picks, what did you just do? Like, what? That is the worst case scenario that you can do. Secondly, if you bring in an offensive minded coach and you're trading down and you're taking yourself out of the quarterback draft, what are you doing there? Like, you don't really have a plan. Like that's why
I think you're absolutely right. If you don't get one of those five guys with the first pick that you select for representing the Houston Texans, then you have, in the eyes of almost all Texans fans, you have swung and missed.
And right now, how I feel is based on who you hire as the head coach on what I want at number two. What I want at number two depends on who the head coach is. I want one of two head coaches, Benny Johnson or DeMeco Ryans. If it's Benny Johnson, I want a quarterback at number two, whoever he thinks is best. And if it's DeMeco Ryans, I want DeMeco Ryans to go get his defensive player that thinks he will wreak havoc in his defense. Because we all talk about how great DeMeco Ryans is, is a great defensive play caller, a defensive mind. Who's his Bosa going to be? Like, I mean, the players matter, right? Like,
yeah,
who's supposed to
be?
Exactly. Like, you need some talent
there's
on that
so
roster.
So much talent on that defensive side, though.
Exactly.
We could name three more guys.
Like, there's more talent on the San Francisco defense than there is the Detroit offense, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
Like, Ben Johnson did more with less with that Detroit offense than what DeMeco Ryans did with that defense. But, look, I'm not trying to, like, you know, have negative points here to DeMeco Ryans. I'm not trying to talk down on DeMeco Ryans. But the point is, if you bring in a defensive-minded coach and he's going to be such a factor in the defensive game planning, whether he's calling plays or not, you got to get him some weapons on the defensive side of the ball. So if you go DeMeco, defense at two. You go Benny Johnson, quarterback at two. That's where I stand right now.
But maybe D'Amico looks at the defense and said, there's enough that I can work with
here. Is there? Where's his pass rusher?
Well, he doesn't have a pass rusher.
That's a problem.
But you got a Christian Harris, and you've got a Petrie, and you've got a Stingley. And Stevie Nelson is a guy that you want to bring back, but he's free. You got a John Grenard, even though he fell way off.
You have to have a front four. Like, you need at least one pass rusher that can come in and be
But like you said, there's two guys effective. On the absolute top tier, and then there's a lot of other guys you can still possibly get to. But he also realizes how putrid this offense has been. And as a head coach, you still have to address that, too.
You can only do one, though. You can only do one. And are you playing to the strength of the head coach, or are you not playing to the strength of the head coach? For me, I want to play to the strength of the head coach. If I'm Caserio, whoever I target is my number one head coach, you have the number two pick. It's yours to make.
I agree that you should give the whoever you go to the head coach the loudest voice in the room when it comes to what you do at two or wherever that pick ends up. But I don't agree with the fact that even if you hire a defensive-minded head coach, that he only looks at the defensive side of the football.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think only there. I think two. 4-2-3-1 thoughts on getting Anthony Richardson later on the draft if Bryce Young goes one and you don't have two. I'm not sure he gets to 12, even though he is a project. And then on top of that, I don't want to use pick 12 on him. I understand he has all the tools in the world. I don't want quarterbacks that can't complete 55% of their passes.
Let's put it this way, too, Jeremy. No matter who you take at 12, Caserio is expecting that player to have an impact. If you take him there and realize it's about a 2-year cycle before he has an impact because he's a project, Caserio might not be here that long. Caserio's not willing to take that swing and miss right now at this point and where he sits in his career.
If you look at the offensive coordinators too that are up for this position, like none of those guys are they volatile guys that they have at the quarterback position? Maybe I'm looking too much at Ben Johnson, but like Jared Goff is not volatile, right? Like he's super in the middle. Like a lot of people thought he was below average. This year he's played a little bit average to above average. The Rams, he had years where he's above average.
Jalen Hurts is a very level-headed kid.
I don't think he's volatile either.
No, I don't think so.
Daniel Jones, because Kafka's the OC with the Giants, Daniel Jones might be a little bit volatile, but is he more volatile than Anthony Richardson? I wouldn't think so.
I think Daniel Jones is, and I've told you this multiple times, but I still believe Daniel Jones can play in this league.
I'm not saying he can't play. No, I'm saying he's an up-and-down player.
Yeah, but some of that, again, can be attributed to a lot of the coaching staff and the people that have been around him, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true as well. 713-780-ESPN, 8275. If they build this defense similar, and look, I think that's on the table. I think if Will Anderson's there at two and Bryce Young's gone at number one, I think Will Anderson's best player available. Will Anderson's probably best player available on the big boards of many draft experts. He says if they build this defense similar, they being the Texans to the Jets, and show signs, Nick will get a fourth year whether he reaches for quarterback or not. Reaching and missing will be the sure way to get fired. I'm okay with like the defensive mindset, going defense, especially if you have a defensive-minded head coach. The risk there, though, is let's say it is the Jets. Let's say that Stingley turns into Sauce and Petrie's like a top-5 safety in the NFL, which might be a reach. Christian Harris is a Pro Bowl linebacker. Whoever you drafted to turns out to be the truth at number two. If you do turn into the Jets, there is still concern there about, well, what are you doing at the quarterback spot? Because right now the Jets are in a huge dilemma of, like, how do we get to the next step? It's going to take a quarterback to get to the next step. So it's a tough call. Tough call.
No, and you know what? And
they screwed up not having pick one.
Well, they swung and missed on Wilson for sure. And that can be, again, when we talk about the importance of the quarterback position, they got better everywhere else. They're the more modern, different way of doing it version of Indy, to where you can have everything else or think that you're developing everything else. But if you swing and miss on the quarterback, you're not going anywhere.
Nope. 713-780-ESPN. Every Wednesday at 2, in case we missed it, the stories we've been dying to get to, we just haven't done it yet. It's In Case You Missed It with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
If the Heat and